The following message is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
At 2 a.m. on May 21st in New Orleans, a drawbridge operator neglected to follow safety procedures. And that failure resulted in 47-year-old Tommy Felix's car plunging into an industrial canal, where the father of five was unable to free himself and drowned. Phone records show that the train operator of a Metrolink in Chatsworth, California, bound for Simi Valley, was text messaging on his cell phone and then missed the red warning signal indicating an oncoming freight train, which several minutes later struck the commuter train head-on, and this tragic event resulted in a horrific crash that killed 26 people and had dozens critically injured on September 12th of last year. Because of PG&E's improper disposal of wastewater contaminated with a carcinogen known as chromium-6, residents of the small town of Hinckley were exposed to and ingested tainted groundwater throughout the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and this resulted in the compromised health of countless people who lived in and around the town during this period, many of which went on to develop illnesses such as rashes, asthma, tumors, cancer, and some even died. Everyone has a duty to do in life. We all have responsibilities to live up to in our jobs, with our families, as students. In our jobs, there's a minimum requirements that we must fulfill in order for our tasks to be taken care of properly. As a homemaker, we have responsibilities that need taken care of in the house in order to have a clean environment, in order to have food on the table, in order to be able to function properly. As students, we are required to do schoolwork, and we are required to take tests and exams and to not cheat on these so that we will gain something of value, that we will gain some knowledge that we can carry on into adulthood. If we do not fulfill our duties as employees, as a homemaker, or a student, the repercussions could be devastating, even tragic, as some of the examples we had just heard of. And as Christians, we have duties to perform, don't we? We do. And what are some of the duties that are expected of us as Christians, expected of us by God? Now, the Apostle Paul was a great example of fulfilling his duty as a man of God. He was beaten, he was stoned, he was faced by wild beasts, he was shipwrecked, he was put in prison, he was destitute. And yet he never failed to live up to his responsibility to God and thus to his fellow man, to those who deserved to have the gospel preached unto them. In 1 Corinthians in chapter 9, beginning in verse 16, Paul states, "For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me." And so the ISV translation of these two scriptures, I believe, states this very well. It says, "For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast about. For this obligation has been laid upon me. How terrible it would be for me if I didn't preach the gospel. For if I do this voluntarily, I get a reward. But if I am unwilling to do it, that is, unwilling to do my duty, I'm still entrusted with an obligation." He still is obligated to do it. And with all that Paul suffered, with all that he went through and he endured, he would not abuse the authority that was given to him. He instead fulfilled his calling. He would not budge on his principles, on his responsibilities, which were given to him by God. And instead, he learned to be content with whatever state that he found himself in. Paul would not neglect his obligation, as he states, and he could not allow himself to even consider such a thing. And you and I, we are not any different than the Apostle Paul. We're not any different than this great man of faith, than the great men and women of faith down through the ages. We may not have been called to do a particular work such as Paul, or we may not have been placed in such dire situations that he faced, at least not yet. But our chance will come, and our chance to show our true colors are going to come. And we have, though, in fact, been called to do a like work. We have been called to not only live the gospel, but to preach it to others. Let's turn over to Ecclesiastes in chapter 12. Our duties are like those of Paul, of James, of Peter, John, Ruth, of Tabitha, of Mark. They are no different. They only differ in the situations that we may find ourselves in today. Like them, our duties include prayer. They include fasting. They include showing mercy. They include serving people. They include study. And they include obedience to God. And they also include preaching the gospel. Each of us in his or her own way, whether by word or by example. Now consider some of our obligations that are summed up by one of the wisest men that ever lived. In Ecclesiastes in chapter 12 and beginning in verse 13, the last few verses of this chapter, of this book, in fact, where he says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter of all these words of wisdom that he wrote down of all his life's experiences." Many of the experiences you and I will never have a chance to go through. "Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man, because God will bring into every work judgment with every secret thing, whether it is good, whether it is evil." And so after experiencing more than you and I could ever hope to know, even some things which we do not desire to know, the wisdom of Solomon came to this one magnificent conclusion, and that is to fear God and to keep his commandments. And so it is our duty to do the will of God and to keep his commandments. And his commandments, they require us to behave in a certain way. They require us to perform certain acts of kindness, of love, of service, and to enforce his commands to those children and in our households, those people that are under our care. Psalms in chapter 100, back a few books to Psalms in chapter 100. And so God's statutes and judgments, they encompass a variety of duties, actually. They are summed up in the Ten Commandments, but they include many aspects of life, of day-to-day living, of behaviors. And one of these is being thankful, expressing gratitude, that is, showing appreciation. And this is a duty of every man and woman under God. And so we heard in the sermon I had given a few weeks ago about how wrong it is to complain about the situations we come into in life. And thankfulness is actually the exact opposite of complaining. It is the exact opposite of murmuring. Psalms 100 in verse 4, the songwriter admonishes us to enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Be thankful unto him and bless his name, for the eternal is good, for his mercy is everlasting, and his truth endures to all generations. And so this thanksgiving that we are to express to God is to be extended to those people around us as we receive assistance, help, that is, from our neighbors, from our friends, from co-workers, from fellow students, as we are encouraged by by these friends, by whether it's classmates or a peer, as we are helped by service of one who even bags our groceries. We are to be thankful for these things, as God loves us through the care and the treatment of others. We also thank God through the way that we treat others. This is how we show our love and respect towards Him, or at least in part, and being a large part of that. Being grateful for what we have been given is a duty, and it cannot go undone. It must be done by us if we are to have the work of Christ accomplished in us. 1 Corinthians in chapter 7, I'm going to go through a few duties of every Christian. And another one is our spouses, our mates. We have a duty to our mates, don't we? We took our vows and we made a promise to them. And we made a promise to very God that we would be faithful, that we would be committed to their happiness, to their well-being, till death do us part. In 1 Corinthians in chapter 7, beginning in verse 3, Paul writes, "Let the husband render unto his wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband." So we are required to love one another, to treat each other with respect, with kindness, to nurture one another in good times and in bad. And love is expressed in many ways, both by words and by our actions and by our behavior, by our mannerisms. It's not always just simply giving the other person what they desire. In fact, many times, sometimes no is said out of love. Sometimes this is required and it is our duty to do so. Sometimes love hurts, but our actions must be defined by love. They must be done out of love for our lives and our husbands as for Christ, not out of a love for ourselves, because selfishness is an improper form of love, the love of one's self, to where you treat yourself better than others, and even to their own hurt. This is not what God inspired Paul to write about. It's not loving our mates in a godly way. In fact, selfish behavior is actually a dereliction of duty. The problem with many marriages today is that when they said for better or for worse in their vows, they really meant for the better. And when things get worse, things don't go as some people may like, many want to bail out. That's why we have so many divorces today. Many want to just shut down or perhaps even unleash the insensitive, uncompromising beast within each of us that we try to keep tame. And this is a dereliction of duty, and it is something that we must avoid. Romans in chapter 13, another point is that we are citizens of this country. We are citizens of the state. And we also have duties to the government, don't we? Now, as painful as it may sound to some of us, and as corrupt as our officials may be at times, we must still fulfill our responsibilities to the land in which we live, as long as it does not go against the morals and the responsibilities that we have to God. Now, Romans 13, Paul makes this clear to the church who were actually living under a very corrupt government, just as we see today. Romans 13 and verse 1, he says, "Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities." This is the New King James Version. "For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God. And those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, For he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. And therefore you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes. For they are God's ministers, attending continually to this very thing. And then he says, render therefore to all their due. Taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor. And so as Daniel wrote, God sets up kings. He sets up leaders. He sets up presidents in this world, and they are used to fulfill his plan. And with this in mind, why would we disobey the laws of the land when they do not go against God? Why would we fight against a leadership that was actually put in place by God? Wouldn't this be equivalent to actually fighting against God? I think it's something to consider. And therefore, we must obey the rules of the road when we drive our cars. We must use the crosswalks when we cross the streets as pedestrians. We must pay taxes, as Paul states. And we must give due respect where it is due to the police officers, to the firefighters, and yes, even those who work for the dreaded IRS. And so it is our duty to give honor to those who have authority over us. And consider, would we disrespect our employer? Would we cheat on our time card and not give our boss the time that is due to them? No, we would not. Would we not follow the rules of conduct in the workplace and dress appropriately and behave appropriately? No. Would we stroll into work around 12:30, take a 3-hour lunch, take breaks when we feel like it, maybe pass on the difficult tasks to somebody else because, you know, it takes too much energy and takes too much thought process? No. We would not do this in the workplace. If we did, we would be fired. We would not have a job because we were not fulfilling our duty. And this principle, it goes across the board. And so we have a duty towards God, and thus we have a duty to our employers. We have a duty to the officials in this land. We have a duty to each other, and thus our fellow man. Continuing in Romans 13 and verse 8, Paul says, owe no man anything but to love one another. For he that loves another has fulfilled the law. For this, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there be any other commandment, and no, there is, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love works no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. And it is our duty to keep the law. And so it is our duty to love our neighbor as ourselves. Would we neglect our duties to ourselves, to our own bodies? Would we not feed ourselves and not clean ourselves and not nourish ourselves and not take care of ourselves? Would we not love ourselves? And so why would we do this to anyone else if we would not do it to ourselves? To love one another as ourselves, it's a concept that involves basically Christian common sense. And it's not too difficult for us to swallow. Treat others as we would have them treat us. Forgive as we would desire to be forgiven. Show respect and kindness to all men, women, and yes, even children, as we would have them show to us. And loving others involves helping others whenever we are able, giving to others whenever they are in need, lending an ear or possibly a shoulder to cry on when others need consoling. Let's turn over to a couple of chapters to Romans 15, probably just one page for most of us. Now this ought to be done, not only as acts of kindness, which they are, but as a requirement of one who desires God to have love for us, who desires Him to have mercy and forgive us, who desires Him to lend an ear to us and even a shoulder at times when we are in need of consoling. Because God is strong when we are weak, and we can also be strong for others when they are weak. And so Romans 15 and verse 1, Paul again admonishes the church, "We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification. For even Christ pleased not himself. But as it is written, the reproaches of them that are reproached thee fell on me." And so our weaknesses, our infirmities fell on Christ. He had to bear them so that we may be strengthened by Him. And when others come to us in need, we are also to bear their infirmities. We are to help the weak. We ought to bear their weaknesses and work to build them up, to edify them. Now, sometimes people need a crutch in life, and we can be that support in the hopes that they will eventually be able to remove that crutch and that we can walk together with Christ. Now, we might all agree that we have a responsibility to God, and we might believe that these things that have been mentioned and even more are our duty to do. But maybe we think that we don't really have a lot to offer others in the way of performing these tasks. Maybe we kind of underestimate ourselves. Well, let me explain something to each of us. As you and I came forth from the womb, as you and I took our first breath of air, God placed upon each of us an expectation. He expected us to do something in this life. He expected us to do something with our lives that we live. And throughout the course of childhood and adolescence, we have all had experiences and opportunities to learn, to grow, to develop various skills and talents. And every one of us from this actually possesses attributes, knowledge, skills that others can benefit from. Yes, I say even the children possess this knowledge. All of them at times possess the skill and knowledge and attributes that us as parents can benefit from. Now, how many of us as parents have had some of those wow moments when the child seemed to cut right to the heart of an issue? And we said, wow, from the mouth of babes it comes. It's given us insight about something, even about ourselves. How many lessons have we learned in child rearing? Countless. And with our experiences, with our obtained skills and the knowledge that we gain, we move into adulthood with the ability to make an impact in life, with the ability to make a difference and to do something of value. And we may not think that we have a lot to offer, but I say that we do. What each of us possesses is much like the DNA that we carry. It's individualistic. Each of us has DNA that is like no one else on earth. Nobody else has DNA quite like you. And also, there is no one else that has something that only you can offer, that only you can give. And that is why God is calling many. If He could satisfy His desire with only one person, why would He want any more? But He does want more. He wants you. He wants me. He wants thousands. He wants millions to come to repentance. Because what each of us has to offer will vary from person to person. We all possess different skills, different talents, and different abilities. We've all had various experiences in life that add to our knowledge. We all have both strong and both weak areas. But where one is weak, another is strong. And this is why we are to work together and to bear the weaknesses of others. And therefore, we are to play nice. We are to share, just as we tell our instruct our kids to do. And we don't do this for God's benefit. He doesn't need us. He wants us. But we don't do it for his benefit. But we do it for our own. We're doing it for ourselves. We're doing it for each other. And so if I wanted to fix my heating or air conditioning, I wouldn't go to Mrs. Canning and get her advice. I would call Mr. Bradick, because he has a great deal of knowledge and experience in these skills. Now, if I needed a really delicious dessert recipe, I wouldn't call Mr. Bradick. I'd call Mrs. Canning, because she has great skills with cooking food, especially desserts, as most of us are aware of. Now, the point is that if we need help with a particular situation, we're going to get with somebody that we think can help us, that we believe has experience, and all of us has attributes. All of us has value. We all have something to offer. If my toilet's broken, I'm not going to call the doctor. And if my leg's broken, I'm not going to call an auto mechanic. We all have specific talents. And when our chance arises, and it will come, our chance is going to come. If it hasn't already, our chance is going to come. And what we have learned, what we have experienced, what we have developed throughout our lives is going to be displayed. And it will be our duty to display it. But right now, it's our duty to prepare and to be ready for the moments of truth that come to us in life. Several months ago, I was watching an interview with a gentleman named Chris Langan, and he seemed like a very ordinary man. He was a little bit above average in height and in weight, and therefore he worked often as a bouncer in a bar. But this man was very different in one special way. And that he is believed to be the smartest man alive today. He has an IQ of between 190 and 210. He has a thought process that most people will never experience in life. And he can tell you the concepts and the relationships of multiple subjects that basically just boggle your mind. And I watched a lengthy interview with this man one day, and I was listening to his personal thoughts on various topics. And he said something that really struck me. He was in the process of working on various articles and books and booklets to publish. And he was asked this question. He was asked, what role should the ultra IQ play in this world? What role should the people with those with ultra IQ play in this world? And his answer was interesting. He said this: they are no better or worse than anybody else, but they do have more responsibility by virtue of their greater ability. Problems they can solve that cannot be solved by other people, it naturally falls upon them to solve these problems. Now, Mr. Langan stated something that I believe is not only true for the intellectual elite, but is also true for each of us. It is true for Christians today, because we all possess talents. We all possess attributes that others do not have. And you and I have been given insight into the truth that most people in this world cannot understand. Therefore, it is our responsibility to use these gifts, not only to our advantage, to the advantage of others, to use them for the benefit and service of others. We owe it to them, and we actually have a duty toward God in this. Luke in chapter 17, and so what does it do for us? What does it buy us to fulfill our duty? Do we believe that we are somehow better than others because we tithe, because we keep the Sabbath, because we keep the holy days? Do we feel superior to others because of this? Because we don't do business on the Sabbath? Does this make us better than those people who do? Do we think God is up in heaven somehow praising us for doing simply that which is required? No. Luke 17, Christ gives us an illustration to explain this truth. And I'm not going to read the new, I'm going to read the ESV version, which I think paraphrases this very well. In verse 7 of Luke 17, Christ says, "Will any of you who has a servant plowing or keeping sheep say to him that has come from the field, 'Come at once and recline at the table'? Will you not rather say to him, 'Prepare supper for me and dress properly and serve me while I eat and drink, and afterward you will eat and drink'? Does he thank the servant because he did what was commanded? No. So you also," he says, "when you have done all that you were commanded, say, 'We are unworthy servants. We have only done what was our duty.'" When we obey God, when we keep his commandments, we are not smarter. We are not more talented than other people. We are not the elite. It is by God's grace that we do these things. It is a gift from him, actually, that influences our minds to make the right choice and to do the right thing. It's simply the right thing to do. Anything that we have is given to us by God. We did not make it of ourselves. We did not find, we did not create the truth. It was revealed to us. It was given to us. And acting superior or aloof, it's to our shame. So we are all light years away from the example of Jesus Christ. And as it says, we are to walk even as he walked. And following his example does not make us better than anybody else. It is simply our duty. And it should instead reveal to us his kindness, his love, his generosity towards us. Us who do not deserve his kindness, his love, and generosity. Hebrews in chapter 2. Jesus Christ had a duty to perform on this earth. He came to do the Father's will. He saw the Father work, and therefore he worked. He saw what the Father did, and he did likewise. It was his duty. His work required certain things to be done, and they were not negotiable. In Hebrews in chapter 2, beginning in verse 17, it says, "Therefore, in all things, he had to be made like his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself has suffered being tempted, he is able to aid those who are tempted." So Christ had to be born from a woman as a man. He had to be trained in such a way to become king of the earth. He had to step into the filth that we have created and to be tempted just as we are. And he had to endure the most horrific, torturous beating and slow death that anyone has ever suffered. He had to do this to be our faithful high priest. And all of this showed how he lived up to his responsibilities, and he was faithful to the very end. He did not sidestep in the least, trying to get out of something that he had to do. And even when wishing that there would be another way to God, saying, "If it's possible that there's another way, let's do that. But nevertheless, let your will be done." He would not budge from his duty towards us. And unlike him, all of us seem to want to sidestep at times. We want to take a rest sometimes. We want to take a break. And we get tired of holding up our arms, of holding up our guard, and we want to give ourselves a little rest from our duties. Sometimes we even want to throw in the towel and give up and go home. Like Paul stated, he sort of wished he could just die and it'd all be over with and he could go and be with Christ eventually. But nevertheless, it was better for those people in the church at his time that he stayed alive. It was for their benefit. And he fulfilled his duty to them and thus to God. In the 11th century, King Henry III of Bavaria grew tired of court life and the pressures of being a monarch. And he made an application to the prior Richard at a local monastery. And he asked him if he could be accepted as a contemplative and spend the rest of his life in the monastery. Prior Richard replied, "Your Majesty, do you understand that the pledge here is one of obedience? That will be hard because you have been a king." King Henry III said, "I understand. The rest of my life I will be obedient to you as Christ leads you." Prior Richard replied, "Then I will tell you what to do. Go back to your throne and serve faithfully in the place where God has put you." And when King Henry died, a statement was written that said, "The king learned to rule by being obedient." It was his duty. He fulfilled his duty to his people and thus to God. Now we must accept our position in life wherever we find ourselves. We must be content with whatever state we find ourselves in. We must accept our calling and the responsibilities that come with it, the duty of serving God. Now today, many are backing down from their responsibilities, and it's a phenomenon that's taking place throughout the world today. People are planning and scheming to see how much they can get away with doing in life, to gain and gain more with as little effort as possible. It doesn't matter who they hurt. It doesn't matter who they step on or whose life they might destroy. And because of this, we have corporate fraud. We have Ponzi schemes. We have dishonest capitalism. We have corrupt government. We have planned obsolescence. We have skimping on materials. We have shoddy craftsmanship. How many of us have had something that we've purchased, it seemed like within days from the warranty expiration, it breaks? You think that was an accident? As a result of this move towards letting up, our morals have declined further and further. And we have been led away from the morals that were held by America's forefathers. People today, they want to sidestep their duties and they think they're okay. And the church has been affected by this. It has been affected by this leaven. And today, Christians view the easy life as pleasurable, as something to desire, something to seek after, where we can only do the minimum. Or we only have to do the minimum. We have moved on entertainment. We watch movies that 25 years ago would have been unheard of. We make plans on the Sabbath. We slack off on tithing. We infer pet doctrines. We accuse the brethren. And we claim to be righteous. How did it come to this? Where did we get off track? Well, there's an example. And being from Montana, this is a good example from cow ranching that bears great insight into the state that we find ourselves in today. And so how does a cow get lost? It happens like this. They're grazing in the pasture, and then they see a tuft of grass, and they mosey on over to it. They scoop it up with their jaw and chew and chew and chew and enjoy the tuft of grass. And then they see another tuft of grass a little bit further. And they mosey on over to that, chew on that tuft of grass for a little while. And then they see another tuft over by the fence. And they walk on over there and chew on that tuft. Then they see another tuft outside the fence. And they go around and go outside the fence and chew on that tuft. Then they see another and another and another. And pretty soon, they lift up their heads and think, where am I? Not realizing how they got there, what exactly happened. And this is how a cow gets lost. And this is also how a Christian gets lost. And this is what has happened to society and what has also happened to the church in many ways. We see something appealing and we move ourselves towards it because we want it. It looks good. We desire it. And we sidestep over and we chew on it for a little while. Then we see something else and something else and something else. Pretty soon we're off track. Now the forefathers of this country understood that the freedom to vote, to choose a lifestyle, to choose what tuft of grass you want to chew on, if you will, the freedom to choose where we're going to graze bore great responsibility. It was a responsibility to live by the morals and principles of the Bible. Now, Daniel Webster explained this truth to the Historical Society in New York on February 23rd of 1852. And he stated, "If we and our posterity shall be true to the Christian religion, if we and they shall live always in the fear of God and shall respect his commandments, we may have the highest hopes of the future fortunes of our country. But if we and our posterity neglect religious instruction and authority, we violate the rules of eternal justice, trifle with the injunctions of morality, and recklessly destroy the political constitution which holds us together, no man can tell how sudden a catastrophe may overwhelm us that shall bury all our glory in profound obscurity." And we see the dominoes being set up today. America's grave is being dug. This country is going to fall. And we need to make certain that we are not moving with the rest of society and that we do not go down with it. Luke in chapter 6. As you and I know, the freedom this country enjoys is not true freedom. It is a facade that limits our ability to come out of the bondage of sin. The freedom to choose so-called alternative lifestyles will be the death of those who take that road. And we need to hold on firmly to Christ and to the hope that lies within us. And therefore, we need to do as he said in Luke 6 and verse 46. Christ says, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? I never knew you," as he says to many in the end. "Whosoever comes to me and hears my sayings and does them, I will show you to whom he is like. He is like a man which built a house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock. But he that hears and does not perform his duty is like a man though without a foundation, who built a house upon the earth, against which the stream did beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great." This country has been building its house on sand for some time now. They are not doing what the Bible says. They no longer hold the principles and values of America's forefathers in high regard. And we cannot allow ourselves to be affected by it. We cannot go outside the fence, grazing where we please. For if we do, we're going to get lost. We're going to fall. We need to make a hard, thick, black line between their ways and between our ways and not mosey on over to the other side. We must instead be strong, firm, and deeply rooted in the Word of God. 1 Corinthians 15 for a final scripture. 1 Corinthians 15. We must not move with a society that is headed in the wrong direction. We cannot follow our human nature, which will lead us away from God, but must do as God says and not sidestep in our duty to Him. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 58, it says, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, be you steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of God, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." And so, yes, doing our duty is work. It's not an easy job. It's filled with hardship, with pain and suffering sometimes. But our work is not in vain. Our work will not go without reward. What's unique about the overall condition of the church today is that we are in a state where we are neglecting our duty and patting ourselves on the back for it, believing we are righteous. We think that we are rich with knowledge and that we are increased with spiritual goods, but don't realize that Christ says we're poor and blind and naked. We point the finger of fault at others and don't realize our own. Many do business on the Sabbath and hire servants to prepare and serve food for them. Many no longer study like they used to. There are even reports of some who are going to Sunday services for fellowship, thinking that this is okay. There are others claiming that we should actually fight in just wars. And then there are others who endorse candidates running for office. This is happening in the church at the end time. And this is why Christ gave such strong words of rebuke in his letter to Laodicea. The church at the end is like the Pharisees. And Pharisee means one who is separate. And we think that we are separate. And we think that we're just fine. In fact, we think that we're doing very well. We think we're in need of nothing, but don't realize that we're actually losing ground. And so we must be aware, we must be on guard, we must not let down in our duties to God and to each other, and we must be faithful and true in all things, trusting God to help us through our struggles in life, to help us, to help fight our battles, fighting them through the Holy Spirit and the knowledge and the skills and the experiences that He has given to each of us. And by this we must fulfill our duty. And so I admonish us to take a good look at ourselves, to see where we are, see where we stand, and see if we might be sidestepping at times. And let's make sure that we fulfill our responsibilities to God and therefore each other. And consider if we're acting out of love, if we're acting out of kindness, or out of selfishness, out of a lack of zeal for God. Now, all of these things are our duty, and we're not going above and beyond what is expected of us. But it is simply our reasonable service. And there is a reward for those who are faithful in this way. And so as Christ reminds each of us, blessed is that servant when he returns and finds us so doing our duty.